Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to a little bit later of a podcast this week. We've done this one on a Wednesday, as most of you know. It's on a Monday usually, but we've done it for the Wednesday because the grand finalists are out. And Body, welcome, mate.
Thanks a lot, Brad. Yeah, obviously Perth and Melbourne, the two teams that we expected to be playing off for the championship, will be. And I think we've got a very special guest to talk about it.
Well, we do. Mr. Perth himself. That's just the best way of putting it. Look, we have got an absolute legend. He is so good. He's from New South Welshman. He is our Welshman and we love him. He's a six-time NBL champion. He's an NBL Grand Final MVP in 2016. The NBL Best Defensive Player six times. And in fact, the award is named after him. He's also been to the Olympics, an all-NBL first team, two all-NBL second teams. He is an absolute legend, lovely bloke. Damian Martin, thank you so much for joining us, mate.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you got my email with my little introduction I sent through to you, so I appreciate that.
We had to edit it back because it would have taken up the whole program.
Well, it feels like a long time ago. I've only been one season removed, but I look at these guys as a courtside commentator. I think there is no way I could stay in front of any of them these days.
It's That's amazing. A question. I'm going to ask that straight off the bat because I watched the games, and mate, I finished 21 years ago, right? And I look at the league now and I think to myself, man, how did I ever keep up with that pace? Now, you're one, Matt, do you honestly feel that straight away?
Yeah, I do. And I mean that, like, funnily enough, when, you know, Bryce Cotton was ruled out, you know, the amount of messages I got about, you know, would you come back? First of all, I wouldn't have qualified. I had to play, you know, six games or seven games, whatever it is, and there weren't enough left. But secondly, I'm not lying when I say that I go to a local rec centre around the corner from where I work now. I play a little bit of one-on-one with my colleague, who I think he played high school basketball in Canada, and that's as far as he got. So I leave there, and it feels good for the ego. I still get a couple of wins, but I'm sore for about 3 days. I get blown by. You know, if the old days is nice, if you've got a backboard tab, if I can get to the net, I go home and brag to my wife. So, yeah, I don't know how quickly it's supposed to disappear, but for me, it was a lot faster than I was expecting.
Mate, just be happy it's only 3 days. It's 3 months for me.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. But no, I still absolutely love the game, but I am in no denial whatsoever that what guys like Mitch Norton did on the weekend, Mitch McCarron, Goldie, like, these guys, they're at a different level to what I'd even be close to if I tried putting on a Wildcats jersey again. So I'll enjoy being a spectator and lover of the game.
Damo, you must actually be pretty thrilled with Mitch Norton because as your understudy previously, like, he has just grown so much. And even in the absence of Bryce Cotton, he's just elevated again. I don't know how banged up he is because he looks like he's taken a fair beating on that floor. But you must take some personal pride in what he's doing.
I love that game, the fourth quarter in particular. I thought he was good defensively the first half, but that fourth quarter in particular, both ends, not just because he dropped a couple of threes, but just, you know, and then got an M1, but his commitment to lead the team through inspiring them. You know, I know I'm not supposed to be biased. I'm supposed to be, you know, sit on the fence and, you know, be neutral with the commentary. The reality is I was getting inspired as a former teammate and lover of the club by what he was willing to do. Throw on top of the fact that, you know, he's playing with a busted hip that had it been regular season, there's no way he's playing. And you can't help but love Nordo, not just for who he is and how tough he is, but how he plays. And some guys lead by scoring points. Some lead by, you know, getting in a stance. He led at both ends of the court. And that's why I think all of a sudden Jesse Wagg starts drawing charges. Luke Travers gets a steal, goes the full end and gets a dunk. Those go a long way to winning games, and in particular in the postseason. And that's why Nordo is so special. And maybe we're only a few hours away from hearing him announce Defensive Player of the Year Award winner. So we'll see what happens.
Now, I've got to say, that play of the game, and I heard, you know, there were so many theirs, was him diving on that floor. He was nowhere near that ball. And for him to come from half court and just fling his body, and what was even more, like, fantastic was to watch how slow he got up. Just how much that hurt him. And I mean that in a good way. Do you know what I mean? Like, you just knew, no, he had no worries about his body and he got up so damn slowly, he just could not walk. That was brilliant. Play of the game.
On that play, if I could describe or explain what finals basketball is, because the reality is I was very lucky to have won 6 championships. I genuinely believe the year we had James Ennis was probably the only year we were the best team on paper. The other 5 championships were probably second or third, don't get me wrong, but we weren't the best team on paper. Skill will get you so far, and I think if you're a very skillful team, you probably can make it to the postseason most years. But it's the intangibles, it's what's above your shoulders that helps you win a championship. And it's no longer about the names on a piece of paper to an extent. If the skill level is reasonably even, then it's, you know, look at that player. Now, this is no disrespect to Dan Greeter, but he's a young guy for Illawarra, great kid, plays hard. But he should have won that possession. And if you want to win finals basketball, you can't expect to go stand over a ball. You've got to go dive on it at all costs, and that's what we saw. So you're right. I think that's not only the play of the game, but that defines playoff basketball and the difference between winning or losing when the possession game is going to be so close, the overall scoreboard is going to be so close. And that, for me, I agree with you, was big time.
Yeah. I also like the the play by Luke Travers. You know, having missed a layup over Tyler Harvey early in the game, then being told in a timeout by Trevor, next time in that situation, throw down a dunk. And then he gets the defensive rebound. He goes the length of the floor, obviously sees Tyler and says, oh, I know what to do here, and threw down that dunk. I thought that was the moment the game was absolutely over.
And I think you're saying it in a much more polite way than the way Trev threw Travers during the timeout. But he took it on board, threw it down, and that's when the crowd just absolutely erupted. And then that next possession, Jesse draws a charge, and the game's over. It was, that was a very special moment. In particular, you forget that he's the youngest player ever to get a double-double in the finals, and he's still a development player. His ceiling, if he reaches his potential, means he'll be playing a lot of basketball overseas, I believe. But hopefully we keep him in a Wildcat jersey for a few more years to come.
Yeah, I want to go back to where it all started from you. But when I saw him play the way he did on the weekend, Glenn Saville and Sam McKinnon came into my mind, the way he rebounds and runs the floor. But it was just phenomenal. Damo, I want to just take you back. Obviously, you started basketball. You're a New South Welshman, and a lot of people obviously know you and know you so well. But I want to hear where it all started. Like, talk to me. What happened, and how did you start basketball?
Because before you answer, the first thing we think is rugby league.
Yeah, go those Blues. Hey, Damo, go those Blues.
We're a week out from seeing my mighty Blues win the series. And being married to a Queenslander, So my wife's cousin is Michael Morgan, who actually played for Queensland for a number of years. Retired from the Cowboys. So I'm going off topic a bit here, but when they actually had the State of Origin in Perth a couple of years ago, Michael Morgan's parents came and stayed with us in our granny flat. So we had Ross Morgan, Michael's dad, and he and I were just talking a lot of banter all week. And then finally we go to the game, you know, the Blues are smashing them at half time, and they say, look, why don't you guys come and sit in the family section with us, because they're in much better seats. And so we head over to the family section. Obviously you've got mums, dads, brothers, sisters, girlfriends, wives. I'm in my Blues jersey getting the most death looks, like more death looks there than any Adelaide 36ers game I played in Adelaide.
Wow.
But anyway, after the game, Michael's walked off the field and he just looks, you know, absolutely broken man. His mum was almost in tears. I thought, oh, okay, it obviously means a little bit more to his family than it does to me. We're getting the train on the way home, and Ross, he looks at me, the dad, he goes, all right, mate, get it off your chest. I'm like, how good was that game, Rossi? That was great. Then we went home and watched the replay of it at home over a few drinks. So it was fantastic. But no, it is. Where I grew up in country New South Wales is rugby league territory. Even to this day, it's 2+, not 4. So I didn't know a thing about AFL growing up in Gloucester. And like most country kids, you play sport because your mates at school did. And so whether it was rugby league, rugby union, cricket, soccer, basketball or something else, I just loved all team sport, to be honest, but purely because of the mateship. And I was always competitive, so between the mateship and wanting to win whatever I was involved in, I was enjoying it. And then as a 15-year-old, it was actually my schoolmates who said they weren't going to travel anymore for basketball, because at those days, you know, you're talking about 6-hour trips off to casino for a weekend of basketball, or 4 hours to Coffs Harbour. It was just incredible at the time in the car, but looking back, they were the best years ever. Yeah. But after all that, they said, no, we're going to play rugby league. And so it was mum and dad, who knew I was enjoying basketball. They said, if I wanted to pursue it, mum, you know, would take care of my four kids, my four siblings, while dad would, you know, work from 6 a.m. in the morning to 5 p.m. at night, knock off work, drive me an hour and a half each way to Newcastle so I could train on a Tuesday, Thursday, and then, you know, pack the car and drive me anywhere from an hour and a half to 3.5 hours to games on a weekend. And as a, you know, 15-year-old kid, you don't realise how much of a sacrifice that entails. You know, hours in a car also meant mum was essentially, like I said, a single mother of four, but it also meant my siblings didn't get to see dad 2, 3, 4 days a week. And there's special moments reflecting on that, because after 12 months of doing that, it was actually me that went to mum and dad and said, I'm sick of travelling. I'm sick of missing parties in Gloucester. I don't want to play anymore. I'm going to go to rugby league, you know, with my mates from school. And they didn't make me feel guilty whatsoever. Instead, they became my biggest supporter of rugby league and attended all those games. And this is where it all changed for me. This was my sliding door moment in sport. After about 6 months of no basketball whatsoever, I was home one day, got a call from a guy who introduced himself as Rob Beveridge, the New South Wales Institute of Sport coach. And he said, if I was willing to get to Raymond Terrace McDonald's, which was about an hour away from Gloucester, he wanted to discuss the opportunity of, you know, coming back to basketball and earning a scholarship. And there's no Maccas in Gloucester, so it was a no-brainer. Yep, we'll be there. And Dad knocked off work, and fittingly, see, and it's so appropriate. I mean, Bevo's a smart man, but why would he recommend we meet at Maccas when he literally looks like Ronald McDonald? So having a happy meal, having a happy meal, sitting across from Bevo, he convinced me then and there to quit rugby league on the spot, and he made me call my coach and actually quit on the spot. And in doing so, he gave me a scholarship to the New South Wales Institute of Sport. And then for the first time ever, he asked me if I could do anything in sport. And I never really had that many goals beyond, you know, trying to win that game or try to make that team a few weeks down the track. And whatever reason, I just said, look, I'd love to be an Olympian. And without laughing in my face or without questioning it, he just said, yep, I believe you can do so if you are willing to make sacrifices, work hard, yada, yada, yada. And I remember all those drives, sorry to keep going on, but I remember all those drives to and from training and to and from games with mum and dad. I'd always sit in the back of the old Toyota Tarago, fold the seats down and sleep. This was the first time I actually sat up front with dad on the drive home. We both just couldn't stop talking about, imagine if even 50% of what Bevo says comes to fruition, it's worth a try. And we kind of made a pact that dad will go back to working from 6 to 5 and drive me to Newcastle 2, 3, 4 days a week, but I can't complain about missing parties or, you know, I've got to give him my best shot. And it was a deal we made, and one I'm grateful for. And if Bevo never made that call, I guess I'd be a busted-up C-grade rugby league player still running around in Gloucester.
Well, the only good thing is you're still busted up, so just a difference.
Oh, man, imagine. Man, I played a relatively non-contact sport. Imagine how many bones I really would have broken. But, telling the story, you've got a smile on my face.
Can I just ask quick, were you with the Newcastle Falcons up there? Is that who you played with when you said Newcastle, or was that a local comp?
So I played for Lake Macquarie Lightning my first year, and then quit, and then came back and played for Newcastle Hunters. So the Hunters, Falcons weren't actually around, and then the Hunter Pirates, they ended up coming back when I moved. So I remember actually going to, when the Pirates were back, Pat Reedy was on the team. And I remember being a junior and just so excited to be watching this professional team. I think I was there for an under-16s run to an under-18s New South Wales team. And Pat Reedy gave the biggest spray to his teammates I've still to this day ever heard. And then I won't tell you what he finished the spray with, but it did finish with him pulling off both his shoes, throwing in the bin and walking off. And I remember looking at Mitch Selwood, who was a country New South Wales boy as well, and we're like, how good is this? And as soon as everyone left, we went and grabbed these shoes out of the bin, and I've still got one of Pat Reedy's shoe in my garage in Gloucester.
So if we look closely, you will be running around in circles one way and Mitch Selwood's running around in circles the other.
Exactly right. And I actually had Pat as a coach years later, if you remember that Adidas. I can't remember, it was the classic that was held in Adelaide for the money. And that money tournament, he was our coach. So I remember telling him, and he just had a bit of a chuckle. And he goes, yeah, that's one of many shoes I threw out after a dummy spit. So there's a few floating around out there.
Oh, yeah, that would have been the high-stakes hoops thing, wouldn't it?
That's the one, good memory, that's the one.
Well, so how far away is this from you playing for Australia and being on the first able-bodied men's team that won a gold medal at a world championship, along with, you know, Bogut and Newley and guys like that. How, like, with that, that's just a few years later, isn't it?
Yeah, so after Bevo got me a scholarship to the New South Wales Institute of Sport, I played that season with Newcastle Hunters, and then with Bevo's help, he helped me get a scholarship to the Australian Institute of Sport. And if the phone call from Bevo was my sliding doors moment, the AIS was kind of the, okay, this is serious now. And that's kind of the first time that, even though Bevo believed in me, the AIS is where I started to believe basketball could be used as a tool to see the world and maybe one day play professionally, because before that there was no belief that would ever happen. And I remember day one of the AIS, all of us had either played for our state or Australia by then, except for Andrew Bogut. And there was 12 of us on scholarship. And I remember Aaron Bruce, you know, was kind of the stud out of Victoria, he and Reece Carter. And Bogut had been cut from all these Victorian state teams, and Brucey just kind of looked at him and was, you know, were you surprised to get a scholarship, Bogues? And Bogues was like, nah. And we're like, how arrogant is this guy? And then day five, we're sitting in a circle doing goal setting, and one by one, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And you know, one by one, we're saying, we want to go play collegiate basketball, we want to play NBL, some guys want to go to Europe, like a Stevie Markovic wanted to go to Europe. No one was in the NBA from Australia back then. And I remember I got to Bogut and he said, I'll be in the NBA. And I remember thinking, he's been cut from every Victorian state team so far, yet in 5 years he's going to be in the NBA. And credit to him, he didn't wake up every day and say, I'm better than you, I'm better than you. He was asked a question, so he gave an answer. And he was the hardest worker on scholarship. He went from being our worst player to our best player within 12 months. And then fast forward 6 months later, he you know, made that Australian team. We went away to Greece, won a gold medal, and he got named, you know, MVP of the tournament. And it's one of my favorite stories about his mental toughness. And he's, if he just says he's going to do something, he's going to achieve it. After that tournament, he got offered, you know, a multi-million-dollar deal to stay and play in Greece professionally. And now this is a kid that with his family, they escaped the war in Croatia, moved to Melbourne with not a whole lot of money. So imagine being, you know, 19, yeah, offered a, yeah, $1 million plus to play professional basketball. Instead, he turned that down because the best way to achieve that goal of going to the NBA was to attend the University of Utah, where he wouldn't get paid a cent. And, you know, 2 years later, he declares, goes number one, makes over $100 million, wins the championship. And I've got nothing but, you know, the utmost respect for not only the player, but more in particular, his mental toughness. Because more, yeah, often than not, when you get told you're not good enough, you start to listen to it and try something else. He uses it as motivation.
Yeah. Gee, that's a good story.
That's great. Yeah, what a great story.
That's a really good story. We could end on that, but we got more. We've got more to ask you. Now, the one thing I want to ask you is, we talked to Mitch about this, Mitch Norton, we had him on the program a few weeks ago, and also to Trevor, about Wildcats basketball and what is it essentially? What is it that sets it apart? What is it that allows this organization to be in its ninth grand final in 12 years and going for a three-peat, which is the only thing that doesn't have in the bucket list so far after, yeah, winning 10 championships. You know, like, we gathered from Mitch that you sort of played a role in passing on to Mitch that this is what it is, these are our core values, and that Mitch now feels that same responsibility to pass it on to a Luke Travers and the next group, that there is a certain way that you want to play, and that's what the culture is built on. So where did that start? Like, when you got to Perth, did that already exist? Was that already a holdover from the Ricky Grace, Mike Ellis period, or did Bevo introduce that? Where did that really begin?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of Bevo. So it is hard to explain. So some of the culture of the club or who the Wildcats are, you can explain with your core values, your non-negotiable behaviours, holding each other accountable, so on and so forth. Like, they're literally words on a piece of paper we come up with, and then most importantly, we hold each other accountable. Otherwise, it's just a waste of ink. But it's also, for me, and that's what Bevo had a lot to do with, those values and who we are. But then there's also, you know, once we have that meeting of the values and the non-negotiable behaviours, we take that to the coaching staff, and then they make sure that they can, you know, hold us to that by the type of training we're going to have. Now, if we want to be the fittest team in the league, it means we're going to train hard, which means we then need the best doctors and physios. So we've then got to go to the club and say, hey, we want you to be able to provide doctors, physios, masseuses, whatever it may be, and there's an expectation we want 14,000 bums on seats. to, you know, cheer us on at home. And they'll say, all right, we'll do that, but we expect you to do 300, you know, school visits a year. So it really is not just the players, not just the players and coaches, but the relationship of players, coaches, and, you know, the front office as well. In saying that, that's one part to it. The other part is something I saw and learned from Sean Redditch. So I'd come from, you know, a team in Sydney, the Sydney Spirit, we folded. Yeah. And the first 2 years I was in the league, I thought I knew what it meant to be a professional athlete. The biggest thing I learned was a professional athlete simply means you get paid to do it. It's your profession. It's your job. If you want to be an elite athlete, it's completely different. Or if you want to be elite at something, it's completely different. Right. And I, you know, got to the Wildcats and they hadn't made the fight, won a championship in over 10 years. So even though there was an expectation, it wasn't like that I was coming into a team that had just won multiple championships. But one thing I noticed was just how Sean Redditch approached every single day. And it's all those cliches. You know, he got to weights early, lifted heavily. He got to training early, worked on his game, trained hard during that allocated 2 hours, 1, 2, 3 hands in. Now, normally in Sydney, once we had the 1, 2, 3 hands in, we went our separate ways. But in Perth, it was different. Then I saw Sean do another 45 minutes worth of working out on his game. Then he did stretching, visualization, sports psychology, nutrition was amazing, got plenty of sleep. And he did that every single day, not just after a loss, not just when the media were there, not just before the finals, every single day. And because he was the Wildcats' best player, I thought, okay, I've never seen anyone work like that. I want to do that. And so I tried to replicate what he was doing. And Jesse Wagstaff was always so disciplined that, you know, he was doing it as well. And then, you know, instead of it just being Sean, it became 2, 3, 4 guys. And then that turned into 8. And then it was almost an unspoken thing now that if I was to go to a Wildcats training today, even though I haven't seen any all season, I'd be very confident that every single guy after training is doing extra work. Not because anyone's ever been told to do it. It's just an expectation that if you're going to wear this jersey, you need to be elite. And everyone has a different ceiling height for what elite means to them, but it's more the characteristics, the behaviours, and you're expected to do that. And Nordo, you know, and Nick Kay, Nordo and Nick Kay were the ideal people to bring in and hold that baton because they already did most of it themselves. They're just kind of pushing them that little bit extra. And now Nick's obviously gone elsewhere, but Nordo is, you know, the prime guy to lead this team forward when Jesse decides he's had enough. So, yeah, it is about learning from the guys that came before you and then passing on that baton because there's nothing worse than a selfish player. And a selfish player is someone who's not open to helping his teammates.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I love hearing those stories. For me, I remember when I was coming through, those guys that I sort of learned from was the Bruce Boldens and the Dean Utoffs and the Mark Daltons and things like that. So it was brilliant. Yep. Dame, I want to take you to an incident and I want to hear how you dealt with that. And of course, I'm talking about, I think it was in 2015, where an elbow from Brian Conklin absolutely mangled your face is the best way, teeth missing, suffered a broken jaw. Talk to me what that felt like, you know, flying afterwards, the fear of coming back and playing. I just love to get in your head of that. Talk to me through it.
Yeah, it was I literally, if you watch the footage, you might see me cough up a tooth. So it was actually a tooth. And I remember they did the old milk trick and we took it to the hospital. But on the drive to the hospital, so I think it happened on a Thursday. And then on the Sunday, I know that a few days later that weekend, we were one supposed to play Townsville again. But then the day after our rematch with Townsville, I was supposed to be a wedding celebrant at a wedding. And so I remember on the drive to the hospital, I've texted the bride and groom just saying, hey, not sure if you're watching the game, but I think I've just broken my jaw. Don't worry, I can still talk a little bit. I think I can still do the ceremony. And then I went in there. Obviously, it was a broken jaw. They said I'll have surgery on the Friday back in Perth. So I flew home on the red eye via Brisbane. Now, the blood did not stop. I just could not stop the bleeding. And I didn't have a shower. So whoever sat next to me on the flight, I'd need to apologize to them. So I flew from Townsville to Brisbane. Then I went into the Qantas Club, still literally in playing gear, just disgusting. And there was Pete Murray, who I love, the musicianist. And I'd met Pete for 2 seconds about 5 years earlier at a function up in Karratha, where I had Liesl Jones, the swimmer, on my shoulders while Pete Murray was singing. And I don't know why. I'm guessing it's because I was high on painkillers. But I thought, oh, Pete and I are best buddies. I should go and say hi to him. And so I rocked up to Pete. I'm dribbling. I've got blood everywhere. I'm wearing, got this disgusting towel on me. And I'm like, Pete, it's Damien. And he did not know what I was saying, let alone who I was. And I'm like, I had Liesl Jones on my shoulders. And he's like, oh, yeah, good to see you, buddy. And then I just walked off. And the next day when the but I had the surgery, and then the next day, after like literally after I had the surgery, the next day we were playing at Townsville again, and I remember the club said, "No, you're not allowed to stay for the game because you're not supposed to yell, and we know you'll get caught up in the moment, and you know you'll cheer on the guys or whatnot." And so I said, "Oh, well, I'm still going to come into the arena because I've got to drop off my tickets." And so my wife drove me because, you know, obviously I just had the surgery, drove me to the arena. I dropped off the tickets, and lo and behold, the first person I see as I walk out of the change room, there's Brian Conklin walking down the tunnel.
Wow.
And I looked at him, he looked at me, and he must have thought he gave me some type of brain damage or something because I still couldn't feel half of my face. And I'm like, "Hey, Brian, how are you?" And he's like, "Oh, sorry, mate." And that's it. That was it. That's the only time we've spoken. I was still dribbling, couldn't move half my face. And just, "Hey, how are you?" Into a, "Hey, sorry, mate." And that's my experience with Conklin.
Jeez. Wow. Well, look, talking about that, here's one I've always wondered. It's a two-part question. At what point in your career did you sort of decide, I'm going to make defence my main focus? Because it seemed to be, you know, a transition at some point in your game, whether you just got to Perth or whatever, where defence seemed to be your focus. And then once that did become your focus and you were being assigned the major guys on every other team, who's your toughest opponent?
Yeah, good question. I think the defence, I credit probably my earliest coaches. I remember with Gloucester, for whatever reason, we used to always press a 1-2-2 after every single score, not as free throws, as every single score. And so I think I was just used to being picking up 90 foot. So those early habits probably helped me initially. But then I had a coach in Lake Macquarie, Vicky Sams, who's still one of the greatest coaches I've ever had. She really got after me to make this a strength of mine. But even back then, you know, I was still a scorer on the team. I think the scoring part probably took a back step when, you know, we started playing on teams where there were much better scorers. I scored because it's kind of my role on the team as well. But then when you're playing alongside an Andrew Bogut or a Daniel Kickett or Reece Carter, whoever was back in my, you know, when I started making state teams, that's when I was like, okay, I'm happy to run the team. We're winning. But we're winning because, you know, Stevie Markovic is getting 20 points, backed up by Blago Yenev getting 20. So let's run plays for them. And it kind of was a natural progression. When it comes to the hardest opponent, at training, trying to guard Bryce, Patty Mills, they're probably the two hardest. They're probably the two that really come to mind just because of how special they are, at not only just off the dribble, but the range they had. Because, you know, Jerome Randall, for example, he was super quick and so good, you know, with the ball. But because he was that little bit short and he doesn't jump as high as, say, a Bryce or a Patty, and his range wasn't as good, you could give him a step. Jerome was always aggressive. He was super quick with the ball. But some guys, quickness isn't the hardest thing to guard. It's change of speed and shooting. Mm-hmm. And Kev Lish, I'd put in that as well. Change of speed, balance, and shooting ability makes you hard to guard. And yeah, Patty and Bryce are at one level, probably distance, then Kev Lish, and then distance, and then you've got a whole group of players. Jamal Wilson was so good at change of pace, change of direction, and he wasn't the fastest guy. If he was a better shooter, he'd be in that category with, you know, Kev Lish as well. So Jamal Wilson, Jerome Randall, Casper Ware, all those guys. Dellavedova was so good at on-ball screens, so he set himself apart again. But yeah, I just love reminiscing now about all these great plays. I was like,
we love
play against
cheese, mate.
I feel like,
mate, I just, no, it's okay because game one doesn't start till Friday, so let's keep going, mate. We're fine.
Kirk Penny, I love guarding Kirk Penny because how he used pin downs. You know, Kirk Penny, Martin Catalini, Chris Goulding, those three were so good at how they used pin downs. But anyway,
next question. How about you? How lucky are you then if defence is your focus and you can go with a Kevin Lish at training at Perth when he was at Perth, or you're going against Bryce, so you're actually being tested by as good as it gets. So anybody on another team had to be easier than practice.
Oh, yeah, I got excited for games because it meant no more Lish or no more Bryce. I actually used Lish as my explanation or my I use him when I'm trying to demonstrate basketball and ball handling, because not everyone's going to be as athletic as Bryce or as quick as Bryce. But Kev, even though he's quick, it's not superhuman speed, but his balance, his core strength, his lower body balance, it was just amazing. And his change of direction, change of speed. He is the guy I like to use an example alongside Dellavedova.
Well, mate, I'm going to jump in here. And what we normally do at this time of the podcast and chat is we're going to throw some names at you. And Boddy and I have got some. And all we're really looking for is like a one word, one sentence of what that person means to you on the basketball court or in life in general. So I'm going to start it off with the Hamburglar. And I'm using your analogy here. And I'm going to go Rob Beveridge.
Second father, mentor, great mate.
Beautiful.
Okay, Matt Knight.
One of the most underrated defensive players and players overall, and a joy to have as a teammate. One of my favourite teammates of all time.
Great. Well, I'm going to throw another one. Greg Hire.
Larrikin, inspirational, plays with emotion. Love him.
All right. James Ennis.
Absolute superstar. How he didn't win MVP that season will forever have me flabbergasted, but I can't wait to dive into the river in Melbourne and find that award he threw out.
Yeah,
sorry, bring his mum. He did it back to his mum. Sorry, sorry.
Yeah, that's right, yes. Waterlogged. So what is this wet thing dripping on my mantelpiece? Yeah, right.
We have asked this one for a few because we've had Trev on before and obviously Mitch Norton, but I'm going to ask you as well. Bryce Cotton.
Oh, best wildcat of all time. Legend. Even better off the court. He's someone you should be interviewing, not me. His story is amazing. Raw, beautiful, emotional. The things he's overcome are incredible. To then go on to be the greatest player the Wildcats have ever had.
Wow.
Okay, well, that's as good an endorsement as you can get. We will be looking to get Bryce on the program. Thanks,
we'll be looking
to get
Bryce on the Damian Martin podcast because this thing's just going so well. I'm going to throw one last one at you, and then we're done. And you've mentioned him a lot because I love this guy, and he's now been in Sydney, and I've had a bit to do with him, but obviously not as close as you, Kevin Lish.
He's one of those guys. I've got two daughters, and if Kev has a son that's exactly like Kev, he might be the only man I approve of my daughters dating and marrying. He's a two-time MVP. He's an all-time great. You forget that he's an all-time great. Yeah. Defensively, as good as they came. I love it. I love Kev as a human first and foremost, and then one of the greatest Wildcats. I got to call a teammate as well. And if you have a team of all-time Wildcats team, he's in that 12 for sure.
Fantastic. I'm going to throw it in. Who's going to win the MVP tonight?
Oh, Bryce Cotton.
Who's going to get the best defensive?
There's going to be a common theme here, Mitch Norton.
Coach of the year.
Trevor Gleeson.
Commentator of the year.
Sean Redditch. I know that sounds bad, but the crazy thing is, Trev's won 5 championships with the Wildcats, never won Coach of the Year, yet if they were to name a Coach of the Decade, surely it's him. So I'm hopeful he gets it tonight, in particular with the adversity the club's faced and the changeover, turnover they've had from last season to this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, if you look at what the Wildcats have been through this season and the players that they recruited and the general opinion of those players at the start of the year, you know, when Kevin White's coming in or Jared Bairstow's coming in, the mood on the East Coast was like, you know, this is the end of Perth. And then they've not only won the NBL Cup, but they're back in the grand final. I think Trevor's coaching has been outstanding. I think the sentimental favourite will be Brian. I think Brian will win it because of that. But I really think that, in my opinion, Trevor is Coach of the Year and should get that award.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's tough with the three candidates because, like you said, Gorge is, you know, the GOAT, 6 championships returned, last to 3rd place in 1 season. Vickerman, minor premiership. The coach always deserves recognition for that. And then Trev, you know, what he's done with the turnover and the players he's brought in. So it's probably the toughest year, of, you know, in recent time for Coach of the Year, but I am hoping it finally goes his way.
Damo, you've been a legend. We didn't even get to talk to you about the Olympics, Commonwealth Games, a whole lot of things that we wanted to discuss. But look, we'd love to have you back. We say that to a number of people. You are one of the best guys that we've had on this show. You are an unbelievable advertisement for the NBL. It's so great that your defensive named, the player has been named after you. And, mate, we can't thank you for coming on, mate. We really appreciate it.
No, I appreciate it. And I apologise for rambling on. Honestly, I haven't shared some of those stories for a long time, and I've been sitting in my car parked on the sideline just smiling from ear to ear, reminiscing about the good old days when I could move around.
Yeah, well, you know, as Brad said, we often say to guests that we'd love to have them back, but in your case, we actually mean it.
Because I didn't shut up, but no, I'd be happy to do that. Thanks, guys.
Mate, all it's right, absolutely David. Perfect, and I'm just going to leave you with something that I want you to take with you forever. Go those Blues.
Good man, one week and it's all done.
I'm ready. Good on you, mate. See you, mate. Oh, Boddy, that was brilliant.
Yeah.
Man, he was good, wasn't he? Yep. Jeez, he's got a career in commentary for the rest of his life.
No, just lunchtime.
Public speaking.
Yes, public speaking, evening dinner guest. Yeah, he's fantastic. And well, mate, like you said, we didn't touch the ice, tip of the iceberg.
Absolutely. We sat here about, 5-6 months ago. Who's going to make it? And I think we did say Melbourne and Perth. And here we are, Melbourne and Perth, grand final series. It's been announced that the first two games will be played in Perth because of COVID. There will then be three games somewhere. So whether that be in Melbourne, at this stage, it looked like that could be positive, mate, with some news coming out of Melbourne today that things will be lifted. So you'd think the next three games are in there. Talk to me.
Hopefully,
what'd you see?
Hopefully. Well, I think Perth was magnificent in getting out of that, because when Illawarra won that first game, it was really there for the taking. Game two at home, massive crowd, great atmosphere. And honestly, they just got outworked. Perth wanted it more. And I was disappointed from that point of view. And then they're so banged up, Perth, that I can't that winning the series was a terrific effort, but I can't see them winning three games from Melbourne, getting three games off Melbourne in this next series. I just think they're a bit too
I agree with you. I agree with you. If it was a one-off game, you'd know they'd do it. And I completely agree Melbourne will win this series. But the only thing that gave me light for Perth is I just saw a little bit in Melbourne last night in that game that they didn't have an answer when the other team was really up and in.
Yeah.
Right. And it took it, but when I say it didn't have an answer, it was only one half. It wasn't a whole game, right? But but when that was there, they didn't really have that analogy. And I'm thinking if Perth can play at the level that they played at in that fourth quarter, but I just don't know if you can do it for 12 quarters to win three games. You know, like that's just a lot to ask when you're taking out an MVP. You're taking out Andrew Gaze of the Melbourne Tigers.
And
you're asking Leonard Copeland and Bradkey win against the Magic back then in a five-game series. Mate, you'll win one. You may win two, but geez, to win three.
Yeah.
Mate, if there's one team can do it, though, they're bloody good. Yeah. All right, talk to me, you rattler. I mean, sorry, you're nasty.
You've got the rattler.
Yeah, I've got my rattler ready. Go on. What's your nasty?
My nasty is I was a little shocked, to say the least, that Josh Giddey shared the MVP award for the 36ers with Daniel Johnson. I think considering he missed eight games, that's a little bit of a and that he, you know, it's not like the 28 games he played were all magnificent. I think there's been a lot of Josh Giddey hype, and I think Daniel Johnson, having won the award six times, I think the club was just looking to give it to Josh so that if he has a successful NBA career as being predicted, then in years to come they can say, oh yeah, that's right, he was our MVP back in 2021. They can pat themselves on the back. I think it was fairly transparent, fairly disingenuous, and a little bit disappointing if you're a fan of Daniel Johnson.
Yeah, well, I am. I'm a fan of DJ, and I thought he had another decent year. I'm not going to say outstanding because they didn't make it. As far as MVP. DJ goes, he was the club MVP. I agree with you. My rattler is to the Illawarra Hawks. It's sort of like a 1-2 here. What an outstanding effort. Unbelievably coached. They're two highest paid players, if I'm not mistaken, in Adele and Besto, both gone, and they get into third spot. And that's my positive. The negative is, oh, guys, you blew it. You beat Perth for the second time in 30-odd games in Perth. You go home and you had it, mate. You had it there. You were done. You were knocking out the defending champions in two, and then you burped it up. Yeah. And they were never going to win game. Well, I shouldn't say they're never going to win game three, but how was Gorge when he turned to that ref in game three and goes, man, it's hard to win here in Perth.
Yeah.
How good was that?
It was good. That was really good. That, look, the series had some great moments. I thoroughly enjoyed the Justin Simon, Mitch Norton duel. That was really fun to watch.
And how good was Toddy Blanchfield?
Man. Yes. Yep, but I think it was played in the right spirit. That's what I liked about it. Yep. It was quite the contrast to the Melbourne, Southeast Melbourne.
There was anger there.
Yeah, there was a bit of spite and quite a few words exchanged in that. But in the Perth Illawarra, I thought that was our two best coaches, and they really prepared their teams well. They really played as well as they could. And the atmosphere was great. So,
all right, so Melbourne to win it for you? So you think Melbourne will win it?
I think they will, because I just think that, them winning three games over Perth is easier for me to conceive than Perth winning three games from them at this point, given how banged up they are and their best players not playing. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, absolutely. Mate, I'm going to ask you a question. BodyNodge.com. Now, our best writer, BOTINAGY.com. Mate, I'm looking at your website, and I'm looking yesterday and at the beginning of the week, and all this is all it says. Our listeners, get on there. Look, go and look at his website, because you know he's the best writer. Mate, all it says is the fix is in. That's it. No other words. What? Talk to me. What's going on?
Well, if I'm being completely honest, it was just a little social experiment on my part. I did it on the website. I also did it on Twitter. Just put the four words out there, the fix is in, and just let the pieces fall where they may. It was, I'm telling you honestly, Brad, it was a reference to nothing.
I just
put it out there, and I just sat back to see what would happen. And my God, did I ever. Wow. I copped, people thought I was talking about the Jokic flagrant foul. They thought I was talking about Phoenix winning game two. They thought I was talking about Perth winning game two in Wollongong. And I got some abuse. I got abused, like, oh, you got to be kidding. That was a good winner. Like, people were just, it really showed to me what they were thinking, because I didn't say anything. I just said,
mate, I thought you were saying the fix is in because we had so many listeners on our podcast, and you're like, what's it?
Well, let's go with that. It could have meant anything, but it told me a lot about human beings, and also about social media, that how easy it is to misinterpret something. It's just four words, four meaningless words, really, but boy, did people respond to it and react to it. And I had likes. I had a dozen likes on Facebook and all over the place. It was just, it was crazy nonsense, to be honest, Brad, but very entertaining.
Well,
thanks,
everyone,
for bringing
get on. Yeah, my pleasure. You know, I don't miss anything on your stuff, mate. That's great. Mate, look, fabulous day, fabulous interview there with Damo. Absolutely loved it. Mate, let's sit back, enjoy the finals, and we'll speak next week.
Yeah, look forward to it. Ciao.
Have a fantastic week, all. Good on ya.
Hey, on the awards night, I don't know who the best referee was, but who do you reckon's got the best referee haircut?
Mate, Damien Lyon's hand.
Oh, shocking, isn't it? What is he thinking?
If he doesn't get a tech foul and get thrown out, he never will.